The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Today FM.
It all happens here.
Let's start the week trending. Aoife Barry, Assistant News Editor of the Journal.ie, is with us, and Michael Clifford, Special Correspondent with the Irish Examiner. Michael, let's start with political funding. And let's be very clear at the start here that we're not picking out any one particular party for attention, because you know how sensitive some of them actually get about things like this.
Believe me, Matt, I do.
So when we talk about Sinn Féin's fundraising in the United States, we're also going to talk about Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil declaring themselves as charities here in the Republic to raise money. But just to start it, they already have sort of dual funding, don't they?
They do.
It's a bit like RTE has dual funding. The political parties get money from the public purse, but they can raise some privately as well.
Exactly, Matt, and a lot of this goes back to a time where I think both yourself and myself in different guises covered these tribunals that showed how particularly at the time Fianna Fáil and Fine Gael raised money. We had the pick-me-ups, tax evasion effectively. We'd unaccounted for donations.
We had the Galway races tent.
We did indeed. And we had donations going astray, finding themselves into individual politicians' pockets and that sort of thing. As a result, we have the system you mentioned. But
There are loopholes, aren't there? There's always loopholes in a system.
They're
set
made
up,
for loopholes. There's no point in having a law unless you have a loophole to get around it. It's the Irish way of doing things. But the one in the US, I mean, this is, I love this. Sinn Féin, $7,000 plus $1,000 per dinner. Now, so you know, Sinn Féin's current kind of slogan, which served them extremely well in the election, which was a great one, was everything's about workers and families. I think now it needs to be adapted for workers and families and millionaire golfers. Because we had this fundraising over there, and the first thing I'd say is, any left-wing party I know of, for example, Labour, Social Democrats, People Before Profit, Green Party, any of these entities, I can't imagine any of them having such an event. Yet, David Cullinan, the front bench spokesman, very able politician, suggested anybody who would raise an issue about this must be hostile to Sinn Féin. So if Sinn Féin are to be accountable, you're being hostile towards them, which I think is a very interesting approach to sort of democracy.
And Aoife Barry, $7,000 for what? I mean, is this to buy a table at a dinner or for four players to play on a round of golf, or what is it?
Yeah, so it's called a four ball. Now, I know nothing about golf, so I'm going to read their explanation, which is four players playing at this golf event. $7,500, you also get brunch, cocktails and dinner, and then you could sponsor a tea for $2,000. Attending the dinner itself would cost $1,000. So, I mean, this is obviously aimed at a certain cohort of people. Your average person is not going to be at this. It's very important, I would imagine, for the party to target people who have a lot of money and are very, you know, happy to open their wallets and support the cause.
But these are people outside the country. I thought we had an issue with our political system being financed by people outside the country.
The kind of American, in particular, I suppose, Irish-American maybe market or support over in the US is very important to Sinn Féin. They spend a lot of time, finding people to, invite to these sort of events and going over there. I know Gerry Adams was obviously, I think, over there the last couple of years. The numbers are there. There's a really good article in the Irish Times actually recently by Suzanne, who's over in the States, Suzanne Lynch, who wrote a really good piece that kind of looks into how Sinn Féin was scaling up its US campaign efforts ahead of St. Patrick's Day this year. And it goes into lots of detail. There's a lot of people over there who have a lot of money who do support the party, and they know this, and so they obviously have their arm over there that works on that.
I suspect they support the nationalist aspirations rather than being interested in the economic philosophy promoted by Sinn Féin, which certainly wouldn't normally attract rounds of golf at about €2,000 per head back here.
Three or four years ago, there was a delegation of what you might, let me describe as millionaire golfers, who arrived over here and were met by Sinn Féin in Leinster House because they wanted reassurance that Sinn Féin weren't involved in this socialist kind of stuff. That would be, of course, anathema to any of these millionaire golfers. The other element to it, though, to be fair, is that they are not allowed to take that money out of the US. That money, ostensibly, is only for spending in the US, which gives rise to the question, what do they want such large sums of money for in the US rather than spending them in the country where they're a political party?
But then what about Fine Gael and Fianna Fáil registering as charities, Aoife, so as to be able to run fundraising jobs?
Yeah, two very interesting stories like that. So in terms of Fianna Fáil Judo Minister brought in a new law that basically said that licences can be issued by the courts for, quote, charitable and philanthropic causes only. But the party then was granted a licence from a district court to run a lottery. So they were charging €50 for a ticket rather than the maximum of €10 under a permit from the Gardaí. And Taoiseach Micheál Martin was asked about it. He said that the party applied for a licence, which they can do within a legal framework, and that the courts licensed it, and that all political parties raise funding within, he said, very strict frameworks that govern modern political party funding. I mean, you know, he was obviously asked how Fianna Fáil is a charity. He said that the judge made a decision. And again, he reiterated his comment about the legal framework. I mean, I think a lot of people will be wondering how a political party is also equivalent to a charity. There's also a law passed by Fine Gael that only allows raffles held by non-charities to sell tickets for about €10. But they have their own raffle that's going on, and the way they've organised it, you can buy a ticket for 20 or get €80 ticket, basically, that will go across about 20 different draws, and there's €100,000 prize fund on that. So very interesting stuff going on there, I think, with the two, with all of those.
There is indeed. Michael, I'm very taken by a tweet from Liam Herrick of the Irish Council for Civil Liberties this week, who said, a reminder that in Ireland, a political party can apply to be treated as a charity, but a human rights organisation cannot become a charity because human rights are too political.
Exactly. And I mean, Matt, it is a ludicrous situation whereby a judge is asked to decide whether a political party is a charity. And I'm casting absolutely no aspersions on any judge in the country. But remember, an awful lot of those who were appointed to bench were in a previous life involved in politics themselves. And their attitudes towards what is or is not a charity and how political parties can be deemed as such. Well, I just don't know how neutral it could be. I'd love to see it go all the way to the Supreme Court, even though it's a district court matter. But it is, it's a crazy scenario. These laws were put in for particular reasons and to ensure that they wouldn't be manipulated. And here they're being manipulated backwards.
OK, let's move to something else. Of course, Aoife, you and I are both from Cork. Michael's a sort of a hybrid Corkman, a Cork Kerry, half man, half monster, Cork and Kerry man, although we all now live in Dublin. But I was down in County Cork last week. I was down in Mill Street to see my mother-in-law, and she was telling me about a story which has gained some national significance this week. She was a bit put up by the fact that the local park where she and her friends, all of them in their 80s, walk for their health every day, was to be shut down for the month of December. But then, that's bad enough that their opportunity to take their daily exercise and be put out on the roads instead is there. It's to be done for coursing. How can a public park be shut to allow for coursing to take place? Aoife.
Yeah, it's such an interesting case. I mean, it's going to be closed from 6th December to the 1st of January. And apparently, local people who've talked to reporters have said that the rules have been around allowing the park to close and to permit hair coursing while it's closed since the 50s or 60s. It does beggar belief. I mean, if you go back and look at it, there's a lot of articles have been written about this over the last number of years. It isn't just this year that it's kind of come to attention, but maybe it's come to a bit more national attention, like you were saying there, Matt. I really don't know the answer for this. You know, I mean, obviously the locals are extremely unhappy. I was on a local website. They had to close the comments because so many people were giving out about it. So there's a lot of disquiet over it.
What do you reckon this, Mike Clifford? Because, I mean, there's two elements here. It's the closure of a public amenity, which is much needed in these COVID times for people, particularly the elderly, to get fresh air and exercise, but also the fact that it's been done to allow for hair coursing.
Absolutely, Matt. And I think the key here is that this goes back to the 50s and 60s when we had a very permissive society, and presumably in an awful lot of small towns you had the usual hierarchy of perhaps the local business people, the priest, perhaps the teacher, that kind of thing. And largely nobody was going to go up against them. If such people were involved in coursing or whatever, then they were able to manage this. That it is still going on 50, 60 years later is absolutely ludicrous on both fronts, both the hair coursing and denying ordinary people just using the park inside in the town, particularly in COVID times.
Okay, listen, we've loads to get through, so I want to fly up one other one, just jump ahead a bit. Boris Johnson's Downing Street Christmas party last year, details are now emerging of it. And he's also apparently encouraging businesses to actually carry ahead with the Christmas parties this year. And it seems that lots of businesses are saying, are you off your head? We're not going to have one.
Yeah, but this has been Boris's modus operandi for a long time now. It's let's all pretend everything is back to normal, then it will get back to normal. It's like he has this belief in his own capacity to gee everybody up despite science, despite a pandemic, what have you. Ludicrous stuff. And as well, the other aspect to it is the way he's denying that any rules were... He's not denying that a party took place, but he's...
And remember, December last year, Britain was in lockdown.
Exactly. And he's not denying that a party took place. He's denying that any rules were broken. But having a party was breaking the rules. I mean... He's going for a Trump Waffle of the Year award, I think. You know?
I think he out-trumps Trump, Aoife, doesn't he?
Yeah, I mean, for example, there's two particular parties that have been in the news a lot. One of them is about a former aide to Dominic Cummings, who's certainly had his own stories around lockdown and leaving. And there was apparently a party around 27th of November for that. And one of the parties was in on the 18th of December last year. And at the time of the November event, people weren't allowed to meet indoors or in private gardens. At the time of the December event, London was under tier three, so the only allowed indoor social mixing was supposed to be with a support bubble. I don't think you'd necessarily qualify all political workers there qualifying as a support bubble, really. And you know, like, I suppose it's that usual thing of like saying one thing, doing another thing. Apparently Boris Johnson popped his head into one of the parties, said, oh, this is very busy, and, you know, remarked on how packed it was and went back and did his own work. And meanwhile, people, you know, enjoyed themselves until after midnight. And it's just, it's another embarrassing story in that kind of the back and forth constantly of what's happening over in the UK.
One rule for the elite and one rule for everyone else. And given that bungalows are very much in the news this week because of a new RT TV show, which hosted by the architect Hugh Wallace, rebuilding of bungalows. Savage reaction from some bungalow livers who feel that their beloved homes are being in some way denigrated. Michael Clifford, have you ever lived in a bungalow?
Indeed, Matt. I spent most of my childhood in bungalow. The other thing I love about a bungalow is it's a terrific put down, effectively, you know, when you suggest that someone's a bungalow that they've nothing upstairs. But
you would never say that about you, Michael.
Oh, no.
And you, Aoife, have you ever lived in a bungalow?
No, I don't. I haven't, but my boyfriend's family do live in one, I think. So, yeah.
So you're going to have to be very careful now what you say in relation to the national controversy.
Well, I have to say, I find the whole bungalow thing so interesting because obviously back in the 70s, there was a really popular book, Bungalow Bliss, which was written by Jack Fitzsimons, architect, and that kicked off this huge movement towards people being able to build these affordable houses. You know, it sold about 250,000 copies. It got lots of people on, you know, the so-called property ladder, and it had a really interesting impact culturally in Ireland, and that's why we do have a lot of bungalows around the country. So I think, like, this show people were giving out because there was kind of some not very nice words used about the bungalows that they were doing up in the show, but that's obviously because they want to show the contrast between the before and after. They can't do up a sparklingly new bungalow, but I think we'll probably see a bit more acknowledgement of Bungalow Bliss in the near future. I know there's a few kind of creative things planned around it.
Yeah, because Michael Clifford, I mean, there were very practical ways, and for a lot of people they've extended bungalows over time, although that creates its own issues, doesn't it?
Absolutely. I mean, this thing this week, Matt, where people took offence, I think there was an ad suggesting this new thing by Hugh Wallace, Mr. Bungalow Bliss, describing it as bog standard. I mean, that's not an offensive thing, I don't think. You know what I mean? I'm a bog standard journalist.
Say,
I don't
it?
Think, you know, I wouldn't take offence at that. Like, you know, it's not a big deal. The only issue I have with bungalows is the bigger context. The vast majority of them are one-off houses out in the country.
Oh,
and we have
the
a
environmental
problem.
Thing.
We have
it?
A problem going into the future in terms of sustainability, and we wouldn't start here if we could, but we've no choice because planning in this country has been an utter disaster. But this notion that there's some kind of an insult or a put down to bungalows, I'm sorry, I think that's now being ultra sensitive.
Okay, another controversy this week, Aoife, unpussed in the firing line because the Christmas stamps don't contain any nativity scenes. Has unpussed, have we all perhaps forgotten the true meaning of Christmas? And what is the true meaning of Christmas?
Yeah, maybe, you know, the true meaning is in the heart of the beholder. I heard a little bit of this on Lifeline during the week. I also heard David McRedmond from Unpussed being asked about it on Morning Round. He was taken by surprise, I think, because Unpussed probably didn't realise that people were actually talking about this. And somebody wrote a letter as well, I think, into one of the papers, across the Irish Times, you know, saying that basically the stamps have mottos on it. They don't have nativity scenes. All of them don't have them. They have stuff like sending hogs, ho, 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 naughty or nice, which some people particularly weren't very happy about.
So some people thought that there was sexual connotations attached
and
to that.
The photo, I can't remember what building it was, but there's a photograph of a building in it, so it's clearly that there was no dodgy connotations.
Was it a bungalow?
It wasn't a bungalow. But yeah, I mean, look, I think every year when we have anything to do with like Easter or Christmas, things like this roll around where somebody spots something doesn't have the kind of Christian connotations of yore and they get really annoyed about it. I mean, understandably, for some people, the meaning of Christmas is a Christian meaning. For other people, it's not. So I think these days we see more of a movement towards inclusive language around, you know, advertising campaigns and on stamps. I mean, like, it doesn't bother me personally, but I can see that it might bother other people. But on Post has to cater for the entire audience in Ireland and not just one particular cohort. Yeah. Although, of course, Christmas is a Christian holiday.
Yeah, Christian holiday, but celebrated, Michael, by lots of people who are not Christians, who might be atheists. It has become, for many, isn't it, more an issue around family and friendship and being nice to each other. Well, you don't seem too impressed by that.
I mean, look, I don't have any religion myself, Matt, but there's cultural religious aspects to it that I don't have an issue with at all. And I mean, knocking that off completely, I just wonder, are we becoming too secular altogether for the sake of it? That kind of way, you know. I mean, it would appear here that it was done
on
purpose.
Are you implying the sort of political correctness involved? You know, the way that they go on in the United States, you can't put up a Christmas tree anymore, that you'll be told to take it down because that's an insult to those who aren't religious, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah, no, that term political correctness is the most abused and misused term of all. But anyway, we won't go there. I'm just thinking, you know, I don't think it's a big deal if there is religious connotations. I also think it's interesting that the one sent overseas, Nollaig Seona, that kind of thing, they seem to be, it's nearly for the old Yerra, Ireland across the sea, sort of back in the time, we'll do it for them, but it's not good enough for us. I mean, I don't have strong feelings on it, but I don't think we need to eliminate all references to any kind of religion in terms of the occasion.
Some of you might remember the former leader of the British Labour Party, Jeremy Corbyn. He has a brother called Piers, who's a bit out there. And I'm going to play a clip from a video that himself and another bunch of late middle-aged men and women put together maskless on the tube in London this week.
Wearing a mask is like trying to keep a fart in your trousers. What is it like? It's like trying to keep a fart in your trousers. What is it like? It's like trying to keep a fart in your trousers.
So, new world order, we've never followed any of your mad diktats,
and we never will.
Resist, defy, do not comply. Resist, defy, do not comply.
When I saw this first, Aoife Barry, I thought it was a Monty Python-esque piss take. And then actually, to my horror, discovered, actually, they're serious.
I think the lads in Monty Python could sing a whole lot better than this gang of tone-deaf people. It's really quite a collection of people who can't find their keys in their pockets. This is just one of those things where it's just an embarrassing, a particularly embarrassing thing to actually watch. And, you know, they're singing the same line over and over again. And it just kind of shows, really, that a lot of these groups are just talking a bit of, you know, silly stuff, really, when they talk about it. It's yelling about the New Order and walking along the tube. It's just a great way of...
Okay, you're breaking up on us a bit there, Aoife.
Sorry, can you hear me a bit better this time? Yeah, sorry, apologies. I think it's embarrassing as well, given that he's a member of the Corbyn family and his brother Jeremy certainly wouldn't be doing anything of the like.
I don't know about that.
Maybe I don't think you'd be thinking about parts of the
story. But what do you make of this, Michael? Because, I mean, this is a lot of, you know, you see an awful lot of this crowd and going on about the Blitz spirit. There was a brilliant piece by Marina Hyde, always worth reading, in The Guardian this week, pointing out, you know, that the tubes were used for people to hide from the bombs. And if people had to wear gas masks, they did so.
Yeah, and this thing of the spirit of the Blitz, as if this sort of image that, you know, Britain standing alone. But when it comes down to it, as Marina Hyde points out, during the Second World War, the state had huge imposition on people because they had to, because it was at a time of war.
Food rations.
Exactly. And the like. And she makes a point.
We're giving out that we might be kicked out of restaurants by 10 o'clock. But even here in Ireland, during what we described as the emergency, there was all sorts of rationing of butter and other types
sugar,
of food.
Sugar, everything, yeah. And she makes a very good point that around 70,000 Britons died in the Second World War bombing raids in this Blitz, using the spirit of the Blitz, yet 145,000 have so far died in the
more
pandemic.
Than double. More than double.
Yeah, exactly. More than double. And, you know, this notion, this sort of retrospective history that we were free, we had freedoms then that are being denied us now, it's just factually completely for the birds, like, but they're trying to use this. This is back to the whole post-Brexit sort of thing of this thing of which our great friend Boris Johnson stands splendidly alone and leading kind of thing.
Anyway, Michael Clifford of the Irish Examiner, Aoife Barry from the journal.ie, thank you both for being with us.
The Last Word with Matt Cooper.
Weekdays from 4:30. Today.